go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. How you doing over there?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. How about yourself, brother?
Doing good. Can't complain. Yeah, well. Finishing up my summer semester. I got a big important paper to write, so taking some time away from that.
Yeah, we've had to put this episode off for a little while or when it comes to recording it.
Yeah, but luckily it'll still release on time, so.
Yeah, it should. We got ahead in our previous episode, so I mean it kind of works out.
Yeah. Yeah, but we have some Mandalorian news. The other day, whoever puts out the Emmy Award nominations, The Mandalorian is up for 15 Emmy Awards.
Damn.
Now, I don't think that's the most.
What's the most?
I don't know. Someone broke, I think. I don't know. I think HBO broke Netflix's record, but that might be across multiple shows now that I think about it. So
could be. Well, I was going to say, how many do they normally, like, would a show normally get?
Maybe a couple, if any. I mean, like, you sent me a thing where Star Trek Picard was up for 5.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then, I don't know. Then you come back with, like, yeah, but Mandalorian got 15. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
five is impressive.
I kind of was surprised that Picard got any Emmys because I could have saw one or two with maybe like a supporting actor and VFX.
Right. I mean, and then the acting. I mean, yeah, the acting was really good. So, I mean, I wasn't surprised. Yeah. And then there were some pretty good directing, too. But, I mean, there was I think the writing kind of hurt it a lot. That's why. But yeah. I don't know what Picard got their nominations in.
I don't know. I know Mandalorian got one of them was best drama, best TV drama. Then another one was best, I guess, guest appearance, which is Taika Waititi's IG-11 for The Mandalorian. Hmm. And I think there was one for visual. I don't know. There's 15. I didn't look at the whole list.
Oh, well, I got... I have Picard's pulled up. So Picard got outstanding period and/or character hairstyling, makeup, makeup, prosthetic makeup, sound editing.
Okay.
And sound mixing for a comedy or drama series. So those are the 5 that they got. And then apparently there was a short treks, the short series that got nominated as well.
Yeah,
for outstanding short form comedy. I don't know. I didn't even know that there was one.
I guess there is.
I guess so.
But in other news, want to make a quick announcement. So after we finish up with, I almost said Picard. After we finish up with Mandalorian in the coming weeks, we're about halfway through it now. So in about 4 weeks from now, towards the end of August, we're going to hit Altered Carbon. But we're going to change the format up a little bit, and instead of doing it by per episode breakdown, we're going to take the first season and split it into 2 or 3 parts. It hasn't been decided if it's going to be 2 or 3. Once we kind of dive into it, we'll make that final decision for sure. But as of right now, Altered Carbon season 1 and 2 are the next show and seasons that we'll be touching upon.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm looking forward to it because I have not seen anything about Altered Carbon. I have not seen a trailer. I have not seen nothing. So it's going to be a completely new experience for me, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be nice to get your opinions. I've seen each season once. I've seen them both when they came out. So I haven't seen season 1. It's been like 2 years, 2.5 years, and then season two came out, I think it was earlier this year or late last year. No, I think it was about the time the quarantine hit, or just before the quarantine hit, so early 2020.
Well, they have about, what, two? They only have two seasons, right?
Two seasons. I think the first one's 10 episodes and the second one's 6.
And they're both Netflix originals?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. Maybe I'll, I'm interested on how the approach I'll take, you know, whether or not I'm going to compare it to like other sci-fi shows or just kind of take it for, you know, yeah, what it is.
To give you an idea, it's like a sci-fi cyberpunk show.
Sci-fi cyberpunk?
Yeah, it takes place in the future. It's got a lot of tech and it's a little dystopian like. You'll have to look up the genre because that's, since it's a subcategory of sci-fi, you'll have to look into that.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'll take a look at it.
Why don't we go ahead and get into today's Mandalorian episode?
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
Chris, what are we watching today?
Well, I think we're watching episode 5 of The Mandalorian. I believe it is called The Gunslinger.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Cool, because I just pulled that from memory. I was not entirely sure if I was right.
Yeah, normally I do that part, so we kind of switched roles a little bit there for a second.
A little bit. But, we get the opening scene to where we get a dogfight, and Mando is not winning this dogfight. Which is interesting because it's a dogfight in space, and that's always exciting.
Yeah, and I don't think his ship's made for dogfighting. It's big and bulky, and it's hard. I'm sure it's hard to maneuver. So whoever his opponent was has a smaller. I think it was like an X-wing or A-wing type. It's not one of those specific ships, but it's obviously meant for space combat. Yeah.
It almost looked like he bought it secondhand from like an old Rebellion ship, you know, old Rebellion X-Wing.
Yeah, might have. I mean, it wasn't, like I said, it's not specifically an X-Wing, because I wouldn't know that off the top. I would know that, but yeah. It was definitely a fighter-type ship.
Yeah, a lot of one-lines, though, in that fight scene.
Yeah, because he steals his line from the first episode. The guy's like, oh, I can take you in warm, I can take you in cold, man. It was like, that's my line, mother flipper.
Mm-hmm.
And then pulls the old Top Gun trick, throws on his brakes, flies right by him, pew pew, gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was brilliant too, because the first time I watched it, I was questioning it, and I was like, okay, how do you slam on the brakes in space? I didn't see, you know, at first I didn't see the thrusters.
You would have to reverse propulsion, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So what happens is, it's really cool. If you pay close attention to that scene and you're looking over the engines, you see vents pop up all around the engines to redirect the thrust from going behind you, which would propel you forward, to redirecting them forward so that it brakes.
I'm curious how the engineering behind that would work. Because would you actually like flip almost like what would it be called? Like on a geosphere, to where you can rotate it in any direction to change the direction of your propulsion? Or do you, because flaps wouldn't work because that would rely on air resistance, and you know, there's no air resistance in space.
I'm still convinced on, so for at least with Mando ship, you know, forward thrust, typical like jet engine, at least looks wise. And then when he wants to slam on the brakes like he did, there's some vents that open up to redirect the thrust to slow him down. And I think every other maneuvering is going to have to be done by thrusters. So, I mean, I don't think I've seen it yet in this series, but, you know, it's got to move by thruster somehow, some way.
Must be.
But because he takes heavy damage in this dogfight, he is forced to land. And where does he land?
Tatooine.
Yes, Mos Eisley Spaceport from A New Hope. And I almost said Return of the Jedi, but... Phantom Menace. Losing it a little bit over here, apparently.
You're not the only one.
So
it's been a long day. So,
but this sets up, because he has to set down, make repairs. This kind of sets up the plot of the episode. He lands. He has enough credits to kind of use the spaceport as a parking lot, you know. And then he has to find another mm-hmm. job so he can have the repairs done, because he's like leaking. He has a fuel line leak and all this other, you know, scoring from the blasters from his dogfight. So he has to take care of that shit.
Now, they have the same droids that were on Tatooine from The Phantom Menace. But what kind of droids were they? The repair droids. You know what they're
called? I think they're just maintenance droids or something like that. I don't know. Like, you know, like C-3PO is a C-3PO unit, R2 is an R2 unit, or an astromech. I am not sure if they have a specific... Chances are they do have a specific designation. I just don't know it off the top of my head.
Well, I mean, he wouldn't let them near his ship, and just force the one lady mechanic to do the repairs herself, because he would not let the droids near the ship.
Yeah, he hates all droids. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, he really does hate them.
He can't stand them.
I don't blame him. But I mean, I thought it was interesting how she even warned him that without the droids, it's going to slow down her production. And in a different scene, when he's going to the cantina, and the next scene, they go back to her, and she's playing cards with the droids.
Yeah, she's playing. I don't know if it's Sabacc, but it looks like Sabacc.
Yeah, I don't know for sure if it was.
But. So I looked it up. They're called DUM Series Pit Droid, or Dumb Series Pit Droids, is what those little droids are.
That makes sense.
I knew they would have a name.
It's a fitting description.
Yeah, it is.
Dumb droids.
And it's interesting, as I mentioned, you know, a couple minutes ago, or, you know, Mando has to find work in order to get repairs done to his ship. So he goes to the local cantina. And I don't know if that's the one that we see in A New Hope. I want to think it is.
Kind of remind it's the same droid, isn't it? The same droid bartender.
No, I remember the human bartender, but there might have been... No.
I remember a droid bartender from something. From one of the movies.
I don't think it was A New Hope. It was a human, or it was a humanoid bartender.
Was it?
Because they didn't even allow droids into the establishment, let alone let them work.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I might be thinking of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, you could be.
When they went back on Tatooine with Jabba.
Yeah, you could be, yeah.
So that may be it. But that actually brought me up to a question that I had, because when he asked if they had any bounty work, they said that the guild no longer operates on Tatooine. I'm surprised that, you know, they wouldn't operate on Tatooine anymore.
Well, I think the guild got a lot of the work from Jabba, and now mm-hmm. that Jabba's gone, and there might not be a Hutt ruler on Tatooine.
Yeah, because that was another question that I had. You know, with Jabba dead, I know there were other Hutts in the Hutt clan, but was he the last? I thought he had a kid or something.
He did. I don't know the details. I don't. You know, I think the kid was one story arc within the Clone Wars. So there's Hutts. I think someone could have ruled in his favor.
Isn't Clone Wars canon?
Yeah, it is. But it covers him in one arc, but you know, don't really know what I don't remember what happens to him.
Right.
And then once Jabba dies, did another Hutt take over? I thought, if I remember right, they were kind of, some of the Hutt families or clans were kind of warring or fighting with each other.
I don't know. I started rewatching the Clone Wars, but I never finished them.
Yeah, I've rewatched it. I rewatched it a few months ago, but I know off the top of my head, I try to pack as much Star Wars canon as I can up there in my noggin, but there's a lot.
Well, it's repetition. I mean, I got to rewatch. I rewatch Star Trek every year, all 5 series, once a year, just to be able to remember everything.
So, but that's something we could definitely look into. Who filled that power void? With Jabba's death, was it another Hutt? Was it someone else?
Yeah.
So that's something to look into.
I'm sure there's a comic about it that has some kind of explanation.
Oh yeah, probably.
Or some book out there.
Yeah, but in this cantina is where he runs into a rookie bounty hunter, and
I don't even think it's a rookie bounty hunter because he's not even in the guild yet. He's an initiate trying to get in the guild.
Yeah, I mean, initiate, rookie, it's his first bounty, and this sets up the plot because now he's probably, the way they play it out, at least the Mando plays it out, is he's probably got one of the hardest bounties for a veteran and a seasoned bounty hunter, let alone an initiate slash rookie.
Yeah, and the guy is saying that he needs to get this bounty to get into the guild, and he's kind of assuming that it's an easy bounty, but the guy doesn't seem all that concerned about the money. He just is more concerned about the guild, and if you're a bounty hunter, why wouldn't you be more concerned about the money?
Well, I think he probably comes from some money and is more worried about reputation. He wants to build the name, kind of like Mandalorian. Not everyone, but you know, he's got a reputation, as we see throughout the series, and it kind of goes along with the clan. But he wants to build that reputation. He's got an ego. He's a little bit of a narcissist. He wants his name out there more than the money.
So you think he was probably like some preppy rich kid who rebelled all the time and just wanted to, has all the money in the world, but he just wants to be known for something, maybe? That's why he's trying so hard?
He offers Mando the entire bounty to help him capture this Fennec Shan, who is played by, I don't know how to say her name because I always butcher this, but it's like Ming Na Wen, I don't know. Sorry, butchered it probably.
Yeah, something like that. I thought it was the lady from Discovery. I thought it was her at first, and then I'm like, no, wait, that's Agent May from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, no, that's not her. Yeah, but like we were saying, this Toro, who's the guy who's recruiting Mando to be his partner, is trying to play it off as an easy bounty really quick, and
heard she's been on the run ever since the New Republic put all her employers in lockdown.
I know the name.
Yeah, well, I followed this tracking fob here. Now the positional data suggests she's headed out beyond the Dune Sea. Should be an easy job.
Well, good luck with that.
Either he's trying to dumb it down so someone will help him, or he knows how hard it is and is just really, really needs a hand. So, not sure intelligence-wise which one it is, but
when in doubt, go ignorance. Usually people are just, they don't know what they're doing and they just fake it till they make it.
Yeah, and that's probably a good point because Mando says you're dealing with a highly trained mercenary who did a lot of what work for a lot of the top syndicates. And she is no joke. Like, it sounds like this is someone Mando probably wouldn't be able to take down by himself. Or at least would have trouble with it, with as good as of a bounty hunter as he is.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's a pretty damn good bounty hunter. Took out most of the guild by himself.
Yeah, but he even has reservations about it. Like this would be a hard one for him, someone who's been doing this for as long as he has.
Fennec Shand is an elite mercenary. She made her name killing for all the top crime syndicates, including the Hutts. If you go after her, you won't make it past sunrise.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was one of those things to where, true, but when the episode actually went down, it didn't seem like he struggled too much. But then again, he did get shot a couple times, but...
Yeah. Which leads us to, you know, they end up agreeing to help each other, and then you learn a lot in this episode. You learn a little bit. You have a brief run-in with the Tusken Raiders while they're going out to try to find the bounty. You learn...
Yeah, you learn about that the Tuskens use sign language, apparently, to communicate. I did not know that.
Well, I didn't either. And so that's obviously a new canon. And I think it might be a situation to where they could vocally communicate with one another, but they have such unique vocal patterns and a unique language that it can't be picked up by outsiders. So they sign with outsiders.
Could be. I don't know. I was curious, though, what kind of sign language they were using.
Oh, I don't know.
Because I was curious if they were using a real form of sign language or if they were just doing, like, you know, random shit. They were like, hey, just kind of play it off.
No, chances are it was a hybrid. It was probably a mix between American Sign Language and some of the other sign languages. So to form like a Tuscan Raider sign language, TSL, TRSL. No, we'll say Tuscan. No, we'll say Tuscan sign language, TSL.
TSL. Yeah, I guess that works. Tuscan sign language. Okay.
Yeah, but you learn a lot about them too, because you also kind of, you know, we never got this from the prequels or the OG trilogy, but you can negotiate with them.
Yeah, I mean, apparently they consider it, you know, their land, and then they just say they consider everybody else just trespassing, and that's why they're kind of aggressive and dicks, which kind of begs the question, you know, is it their land? Like, are they actually, like, native to the planet and actually have claim to it?
They could be. It might be something that, because I don't think we see Tuscans on any other planet, so there's a good chance that they're, it's like a Native American situation where that was their land, outsiders came in and kind of started to take it over.
Yeah, so maybe they are actually native to the land. So maybe, you know, they don't think it's their land. Maybe it is their land. And, you know, when these people long time ago found the planet and started using it, they got pissed. And that's why they don't like anybody.
Yeah, that's why I use the analogy of it's probably similar to how the natives were when Europeans came over.
Could be.
So
could be.
Food for thought. Maybe we'll get more in future Star Wars series or movies. Mm-hmm. Either one. Probably in comics, but
maybe that was the intention of George Lucas. No, because not even made that his intention from the beginning. And like we said, this was new.
No, I think that this probably would have been the brainchild of Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, and then they ran it by Lucas, and Lucas was like, okay, I can see that. I like it.
Yeah, maybe. Because
they did work with Lucas quite a bit. I mean, there's photos of him being on set and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, well, why not? I mean, why not get the original man's input?
Yeah, especially when Dave Filoni, his protege, his apprentice, is running, not running, but co-running things. Why not?
Well, moving on from the Sand Raiders, they ended up having to give up the binoculars as a trade for passage through their land, and they came across a dead bounty hunter who's being dragged by I don't know what animal that was.
Dewback.
Oh, Steve does. I definitely didn't.
Yeah.
What's a dewback?
It's what you see on screen.
Okay. It's good explanation.
Like, it's I mean, I don't know the anatomy and physiology obviously of it, but a Tatooine camel.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looked like. Almost like one of those
but blubbery.
Yeah, almost like one of them old dinosaurs from Jurassic Park, not one of the common ones. I don't remember what they're called because
if you take dinosaurs. Like a, I think it's a Stegosaurus and remove all the spiky things on its back, that's probably what it is.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, Stegosaurus of Star Wars.
Yeah, it's just dragging a bounty hunter, and then Mando goes out to investigate to realize, and then gets shot.
He gets popped
twice.
Yes, one in the shoulder and one in the back.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the Beskar, he would have been dead. And he even pointed that out, like the Beskar held.
Yeah, he said he was like at that range the Beskar held up, and then he gets shot again later at a much closer range, and it still holds up. So it's like, how close does it have to be? Because he portrayed this weapon she's using as a very powerful weapon, and you know, how much closer does he have to be before he's at risk if he takes a direct hit in the Beskar?
Yeah, I mean, he said that, what was it, a modified MK sniper blaster or whatever is the only thing that could do it from that range. So I'm assuming that's like the Barrett 50 cal of its, of like blasters.
It's got to be. And then it's funny after, not funny, but it's funny for me being, you know, knowledgeable in firearms somewhat.
Yeah, we're both, yes, semi. We both know a little bit.
When we fast forwarded to, and we're kind of sticking with this A storyline, there's a B storyline that takes place with the ship and whatnot, but not a lot happens there, but we'll touch on it a little bit later.
Just,
but with this
mostly Baby Yoda being awesome as per usual
and hilarious, but they decide to wait it out, wait until dark, give themselves a better chance since she has the high ground, insert Obi-Wan clip here.
yeah, right.
But So their plan is to kind of bum rush her with these flashbangs, Star Wars flashbangs. He calls them something. I don't remember what they were, but apparently
almost like flare guns.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, something like that. And the purpose of them, I guess, is to blind a person and to kind of knock out their scopes temporarily so they can't get a point of aim.
Right. That blinding flash in the scope.
Oh, yeah. And then so they bum rush her and I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the scope she's using. I'm like, that looks like thermal optics. I could buy that. And then she has like a red dot sitting on top for like close quarters.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, when I was training with the ROTC, what they would tell you is if you're going for, you don't always want to look down your sight when you're aiming, especially if your weapon is in a downward position and you're going straight up, you want to look like right above your sight, kind of where you're aiming. So it makes sense they might put like a little red dot there to get a better aim for that up close quarter combat.
They could, you know, but I think of it as, you know, you might put one on like an M4, one of these military actual assault rifles, and then so you have a little maybe 1x or 1.5x4 magnification scope if you're out plus 100 yards, and then you have this red dot on top that's probably zeroed at like 20 for close quarters combat. Which is weird because since you described the weapon as a sniper blaster, it would be weird to have one of those on it. You would think she would have either a side piece or a different type of blaster that she can use if she had to get up close and dirty.
It could be, but I mean, it would make sense. You know, if you've ever played Call of Duty with the sniper rifle, it's kind of tough to do it when you're in that close quarter combat situation, hence why the quick scope became a big thing. But in real life, you just, you know, if you're stuck with that rifle, you just quick up, have that red dot ready to go on top of it for, you know, the exact situation, which actually happened in the episode.
Yeah, snuck up, I guess, behind. It could. I don't know. I haven't played Call of Duty in a while. I'm lacking on my games. But anyways, that's a tangent. So after they bum rush, this Fennec is able to take out one Mando speeder. And Toro is able to come up behind her. They duel a little bit. And Mando takes another shot in the chest, as I referenced earlier. I was like, that's pretty close. He's got to be within a couple hundred yards of her.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, the first two that she got, they were a good mile and a half away.
Yeah.
Like, they were pretty far away.
Yeah.
I'm curious how that works, though. Like, would the blaster bolt dissipate over like a certain distance, or does it just like lose its energy so that way it'll hit you at the distance but it won't really do anything? Like, how does that work?
For the time being, I'm treating it kind of similar to a bullet, but it's less affected by gravity, so after a while it will lose its energy, and that's kind of why at that range his Baskar held up, and even at the shorter range it held up because it had lost enough of his energy to be less effective than if it was point blank or within however many yards its effective range is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't think gravity would play that much of an effect. You know, I know that, you know, gravity does warp light because black holes, you know, we've proven that when we photographed the black hole, that's kind of how it works. But I didn't think the planet would have enough gravity to affect the light like that, like a bullet would. Or like it would affect a bullet, you know what I mean?
I think gravity has an effect, but I don't think it's anywhere near that it does with a bullet on Earth. It might be minimal. So the drop might be very minimal, or, you know, it might have no effect on it at all.
I don't know. I think I'll go with the dissipation of energy over time.
Would be a good episode? Similar in season two, he's training someone on a, you know, shoot long range, and then they give us a brief explanation of how it works. Is it physics like with a bullet on Earth? Is it Star Wars physics where it's pseudoscience and they're just kind of making something up? I would love that explanation somewhere in this series, because either this or the Cassian Andor series, which is going to surround him as a spy. I think those two series have great potential to explain this question.
Well, I think the logical way to do that would be to have him pick up, you know, somebody young to train and mentor and teach him how to shoot, and kind of that would be the simplest way to explain it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Well, I was kind of thinking of a situation like we saw last episode with the Sanctuary, where he was training some people to shoot. Obviously not long range. This was more close quarters. But a similar situation like that, help someone, or he teams up with someone and he's teaching them long range shooting. So maybe that person can use, you know, he could use them as cover for a mission, and then kind of just real quick, 20 seconds, explain the physics behind it. That's all it takes. That's all we need.
Yeah. Well,
I'm in for that.
Email the director.
Yeah, I'll tweet. Dale, this is John Favreau. I'll tweet John Favreau and Dave Filoni.
He'll totally respond.
Yeah. You know, of course, this question would come up from two pro firearm people, so.
Yeah,
but right. It is what it is.
I forgot where we're at.
We're towards the end because, you know, they capture Finnick. And then because he got a speeder destroyed, he had to go back, and someone had to go back and find the Dewback. And Toro's like, well, I'm not leaving you with my ride and my bounty, because you're just going to bounce, take the money, and leave me out in the middle of the desert. So Mando's like, all right, I'll get it. So Finnick ends up talking him into trying to capture the Mandalorian, because she tells him what happens with the guild, that he took one of his high target or high valued bounties with him and some child. So, you know, lights go off in Toro's head because he sees Yoda earlier in the episode. And so he ends up killing Fennec and going off and holding Baby Yoda hostage.
Yeah, not a smart move on her part. She probably should have waited till like they got to the ship first before, you know, where she had a more plausible route of escape.
Yeah, I'm not sure what her thoughts were going through it. I was a little disappointed because I was hoping, I like her as an actress,
more character development. Yeah,
I was hoping to see her. See her more. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, same.
And maybe we won't, hinting towards the end of the episode, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Obviously Mando comes back. She's dead. He's gone. He rides through. I wonder how far they traveled on those darn speeders, because I imagine that had to take at least a day to ride. Cause he had to walk all the way to get the Dewback, come all the way back to the point where they were, then ride all the way back to Mos Eisley spaceport. That had to take some time.
Well, he only rode on that Dubai, right?
Dewback.
Cause the other guy took the Dewback. Cause the guy took the speeder over to the ship.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying they took a speeder out, which seems like once he and Toro met up in Mos Eisley, they took speeders out. And imagine, it seems like they rode off for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
Encounter the bounty hunter. So now he has to backtrack on foot to go find the Dewback. That's going to take time. He has to. Dewback is a very slow moving animal. I don't know why the hell they didn't walk.
Probably.
But.
Waste of energy, maybe?
Maybe. So then he has to go from where he was going to pick up the bounty in Toro all the way back to Mos Eisley. And I think it was sunlight when he found her dead, and it was dark when he made it back to Mos Eisley. So it had to take three or four times as long to make that journey on Dewback.
Yeah, I mean, it could. I mean, because when they got back to the ship, it was dark. It was still dark when Mando made it all the way back.
That's where I don't remember off the top of my head, because I thought when he made it back to pick them up, because when Toro shoots Finnick, it's dark.
Yeah, because they wait till dark before they go after her, and then he goes finds it.
And I thought it was light out when he came back to pick them up, so they all three of them can go back to Mos Eisley.
I don't remember. I think it was, and it could have just taken all day it could have just taken all day and then taken the rest of the day through the night for him to make it all the way back after, you know, finding out that she's dead and she heading back to the ship.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How long did he have to hold? How long did Toro have to hold Baby Yoda hostage?
Yeah.
At least 10, 12, 13, for a day. I don't know how, a lot of hours, not 12, very patient. Not 10, 12, 14 days, but hours or a day.
Yeah. The guy's very patient for that dramatic, dramatic entrance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. He really is. But that, I mean, we kind of, we blew through that A storyline really quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say so. It was a short episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, and to, so we'll touch on B for a little bit, but B's not much, there's not much going on, and it's more of the comic relief of the episode.
Yeah. I like that mechanic. She was funny.
She was funny, but there, I mean, when she was interacting with the dumb droids, it just, the acting wasn't as believable as some of the actors have been, at least right. In my mind. But there was some time she was obviously the comic relief along with the droids, and you know, she's supposed to be repairing the ship, but is playing cards.
Yeah, well, the dummy droids are usually the comic relief. You know, if you look back to all the previous episodes on Tatooine.
Oh, yeah, they definitely are. There's a reason why they're called the DUM droids, I'm sure. Yeah. No, but one of the things, while they're playing cards, I wanted to bring up, when Baby Yoda makes a noise in the ship to kind of startle him, it sounds, and I haven't listened to this noise since I watched A New Hope a month or two ago, but it sounds like a similar noise that Obi-Wan makes in New Hope when he scares off the Tusken Raiders to come to Luke's aid. I'm not saying it's the same, and this is, you know, it's been a while since I've heard that noise, but at first listen, it sounded like a similar noise. So yeah, so here I will play a clip of both. First the Baby Yoda, second the Obi-Wan, to kind of tell the differences.
Three bolts and a motivator.
No, it actually sounds a little bit.
So, okay. Now that I'm hearing it.
I don't.
It sounds like him opening.
It sounds more like that creature.
What creature?
Like, you know that creature from Return of the Jedi that's by Jabba's side that laughs, that little puppet one?
No, not really. I remember what you're talking about, but I don't think it sounds like that. I was thinking,
like the scene where he gets like shocked and jumps up, that noise, that's kind of what it sounded like.
Yeah. No, I think it sounds more like, I mean, it sounded similar. There were some similar noises between the Obi-Wan noise and Yoda's noise, or Baby Yoda's noise, but I think it was just him opening the door to that room Mando's been keeping him in when he takes his long ass naps. Mm-hmm. And then him kind of doing a baby cry.
Could be.
Because then he walks out all adorable, like a toddler all, you know, who just woke up from his nap and needs some chicken nuggies.
Yeah, right.
So.
I gotta love Baby Yoda.
But the episode ends. We'll wrap it up, talk about the last scene where Mando finally makes his way back to Mos Eisley. Toro is holding Baby Yoda at gunpoint, and we're like, man, how many times is Baby Yoda going to be threatened in this show? But, you know, I guess hundreds of bounty hunters are looking for him. So,
yeah, that's true. Everybody wants this Baby Yoda dead, which I don't know why they would. I mean, I figured like everybody would be up in arms for that.
Well, I think there's so much money involved. Some of their morals get set aside for the huge payday.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, look how valuable that Baskar's been to Mando. Saved his life already. He got shot three times.
Three times already.
By a powerful rifle.
And that's very just powerful. This episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But, you know, just when Toro thinks he's a step ahead of Mando, Mando pulls out one of those flashbangs and sets it off, steps aside, shoots him, and then Baby Yoda drops. I don't know what's with people dropping Baby Yoda in this show, but I think that's the second time so far this series he gets dropped.
Is it? When was the first time?
Not in the first, because he's only in it for the first couple minutes. It's probably the third when he gets churned over to the Empire, went to the client and the doctor, Pershing's. I think he's dropped in that episode somewhere.
I guess I just don't remember it.
Maybe not off the top of my head, but it just seems like, I don't know.
Maybe the next time I rewatch the series, I'll look out for it.
Yeah.
But I only remember this one time so far.
Yeah. Well, you have any other talking points? Anything you want to bring up about the episode? Mandalorian culture?
Well, Bounty Hunter skill? I was curious about that very last scene because somebody, you know, tracked down.
Oh, yeah. How did I skip that? God, I'm such a tard. But oh, I forgot I wanted to bring that up. Yes, that has been the ultimate what the hell moment from this whole series. Like, talking episodes 1 through 8, since we've obviously seen it, this is the what the hell moment. And this is the biggest unanswered question at the end of season 1 that I really want to know an answer to.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because one of the things that I was curious with this episode was you only got 8 episodes, and this episode almost seems unnecessary when it comes to developing the storyline. So maybe the whole point of this episode was that last scene, and that last scene is setting something up for next season. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
It has to be, because...
Because, I mean, otherwise, what was the point of this episode? You know, I mean, yeah. he basically just went on a mission to get money to pay for a repair, and somebody tried to kill Baby Yoda, which happens in every episode.
Yeah, and that was one of the things. Before the series came out, I kind of wanted to see that. An overarching story, but a couple episodes where it was him doing jobs, or him, you know, being a bounty hunter and working and living in the underworld. And we see that kind of in the last episode. He was more in hiding. This one, we definitely get to see a job done. And then the next episode, I know we get to see him do another job. So I kind of wanted to see that, where it could integrate into this season and to the future seasons, but it's still him. Cause essentially this season is just him being Papa Bear protecting Baby Yoda cub.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I think who do you think that person could be?
Well, I mean,
just as a reminder to the listeners, we're talking about the very last scene where you see Finnick, the bounty they were hunting. Someone walks up to her and kneels down, but you just see the face shot of her and then the knees of whoever approached her. You don't see anything else, and that's cut, end of episode. So, Chris, give me your theory. Who do you think it is?
Well, they are on Tatooine, so I mean, it's like a logical assumption is that, you know, they said that she's worked with a lot of crime syndicates in the past, so a logical assumption would be it'd be one of her previous crime syndicates, maybe the Hutts. You know, we talked about, is there any Hutts left on Tatooine? Maybe it's a remnant of the Hutts trying to rebuild the crime syndicate that they had. You know, we got some unanswered questions with the Solo. So maybe it's, well, I don't remember the name of that crime syndicate.
Crimson Dawn.
Crimson Dawn. Maybe it's Crimson Dawn. Or maybe it's a remnant from the beginnings of the First Order. You know, somebody who used that bounty hunter for
Snoke.
Something important for the First Order. Yeah, Snoke, or somebody trying to build up the First Order. And that's what this whole storyline's been about.
So, okay, what if Snoke is like now a leader of one of these syndicates, and he was using her kind of like he was using Emilia Clarke's character, and he went to go find her, and now, you know, because Snoke, long story short, my mind's boggled because this theory just popped in my head, but what if it's like a Snoke who is a crime leader right now, and you're partially correct, it's him building the stepping stones into the First Order?
Could be starting with the criminal syndicate, building into using the remnants of the Empire, then hence the reason why they're stormtroopers, and you know, the new First Order stormtroopers look similar but not identical to the old school ones.
Yeah, because I was gonna go as far as I know this is, I mean, it might not be that far-fetched, but Boba Fett.
I don't know.
This is hold on, let me lay it out for you.
Well, so this Bubba, yeah.
Show 5 years after Return of the Jedi, Boba Fett supposedly dies getting eaten by a Sarlacc at the Return of the Jedi on Tatooine. There's a non-canon story where he's able to crawl his way out of that Sarlacc, and he sheds his armor because now it's useless, because it was able to protect him from being digested from the Sarlacc. Crawls his way out. Now, this is where I jump in. He fills kind of the void of Jabba the Hutt being gone. And I don't know, maybe he takes over Tatooine. Nah, this is far-fetched. People are going to listen and be like, nah, you sound stupid.
I mean, it could be. I've heard that storyline before, where he crawled out of the thing before.
I think it's Boba Fett. I think they were either partners or, you know, they worked together and somehow.
It's definitely going to be somebody related to a criminal organization. I think that the fact that she's worked with criminal syndicates in the past, it's gonna play into there somehow. That's why I was thinking maybe this is their way of explaining the Crimson Dawn situation that they kind of left with Solo.
Maybe, but Crimson Dawn, you know, Darth Maul was the leader of Crimson Dawn. Darth Maul died just before Episode 4 takes place.
Well, I never got the chance to... What, did they? Did he? Well, oh yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's in Rebels.
Well, again, I would like to see... Again, I'd still like to see... that was one of the things with Solo that I was actually looking forward to after watching that movie, was seeing how they went with the storyline. I was a little disappointed that they're not going to continue that.
Yeah, I think Disney screwed the pooch there. And while Solo's not the greatest movie out there, it was good enough. I thought it merited a continuing story. We'll see what they do. There's rumors they might do something on Disney Plus with Donald Glover's Lando Calrissian. There's rumors that they may bring back Alden Ehrenreich to reprise his Han Solo character. So we'll have to see. But my theory, that was Boba Fett. Somehow, some way.
Well, I guess we'll have to find out next season.
Yeah, season two. 2 months away.
Or let's keep an eye out for these next couple episodes and see if there's anything that might, you know, Easter egg on what that was.
Yeah, I don't think there is. But
you never know. But, I mean, I haven't seen these. All the rest of these I've only seen once. I've seen 6, 7, and 8 one time when they came out. So you never know.
Never know. All right. Well, let's go ahead. Let's start to wrap this up. What did you think of the episode?
Well, again, you know, one of the big things with this episode was, you know, what was the point of it? And I think we kind of talked about that a lot on that this scene at the end may be the whole point of this episode, to set up a storyline for season two. If that's the case, that would make sense. But again, it was an interesting episode, funny, subtle humor, especially with Baby Yoda, which is always, you know, A+ in my books. But
yeah,
I think this was just felt like a filler episode to me, almost kind of unnecessary to the storyline of the plot. So probably 7 out of 10 for this one.
Okay. See, and I think it was a good episode. Dave Filoni directed this episode, and I think he also directed Episode 1. And I definitely, even I think this was his first two live action first time directing. And I think there's already improvement from Episode 1 to this episode directing wise. Yes, it kind of feels like a filler episode, but this is, for me, this is what I was hoping to see at the start of this series, was to see a bounty hunter being a bounty hunter, taking random jobs, having kind of a overarching storyline, but anthology type situations, to where, you know, this episode doesn't really have much to do with last episode, and I don't think it has much to do with next episode. So I enjoyed it from that perspective, because I want to see that underworld and the Bounty Hunters Guild.
I get that idea, and that's kind of the same, you know, philosophy I was kind of going under when I first heard about the show. But as soon as kind of Baby Yoda got thrown into that equation, my whole direction and view on that show changed to, like, I want to know how this is going to go with Baby Yoda. And I don't know, maybe I'm starting to worry or kind of base the show around Baby Yoda a little bit more than around the Mandalorian.
No, and I think it might be one of those things. It's one of those things. This is a Star Wars show, so it had to find a way to implement the Force somehow.
Right.
And this is the way it does it. You don't get a lot of it, but you see a little bit of the Force. You know it's there now. You're always reminded of it seeing Baby Yoda. So I think it's a good way to get a life of the bounty hunter as he's protecting this child, but still having that Star Wars feel with the Force.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, in my opinion, probably 8 out of 10. I guess I liked it a little more than you did. So,
well, again, I mean, it just kind of, like I said, it was just kind of that plot, that one major, like, what was the point of the show that kind of, you know, ruined it for me? Otherwise, if it had more relevance to the plot, I would give it a higher grade, probably 8.5, 9 out of 10.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat it.
Punch it,
kill
it. Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it, Huxley.
Punch it. Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
So, Chris, what do we have to look forward to next week on Deep Space High?
Well, for next week, we are going to be watching episode 6 of The Mandalorian, entitled The Prisoner, where Mando joins a crew of mercenaries who are trying to spring a convict from a prison ship.
Interesting.
And that's about all I got for next week. Yeah, he's convicted of something, but I guess we'll find out next week.
Yeah, if I remember right, this was an episode I liked. There's a lot of good guest stars.
Well, they've all been episodes we liked, so.
Well, this is, I mean, it's one I really like. There's a lot of guest stars, a lot of Easter eggs, a lot of cameos.
This should be a good one.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but it's one that I remember pretty well. So it's one that stuck with me a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember this. I remember this one. It's supposed to be where he joins. Wasn't this his old crew, or am I thinking of a different?
No, this is the episode he like meets up, not with his old crew, but runs into one of his old like crew buddies, and then that guy put together a crew to go rescue another guy, so he joins that crew. But yeah, he meets up with one of his old mercenary buddies.
Well, you're going to get more of what you want, more of the bounty hunter kind of stuff. Well, I guess that will do it for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion of The Mandalorian.
Yes. And don't forget to keep the conversation going with the hashtag Deep Space High. And also feel free to check out our Facebook page called Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews. Find us, give us a like. We'll give updates on any announcements or anything going on with the show. Also, follow us on Instagram. You'll see pictures like cute Baby Yoda that I have of a Funko Pop. And you'll also get updates there about the show. That's at Deep Space High Podcast.
And also, let us know what you think about the show by leaving a review at Apple Podcast. And these reviews will help us, you know, get better content out there, and we get valuable feedback to give you guys a better experience. So,
yes.
Well, I guess that will do it. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Yeah, and I am Master Jedi Steve. May the Force be with you.